So long-term advice for any coaches based on this research is that it is absolutely shown that this type of training is effective in terms of helping enhance power output, which is essential in athletes that play sport, and protective against those athletes that are not participating in strength training, which is often something that we see a lot of athletes drop off of when their sport seasons or sport buy-ins increase.
Hi, Emily. It's my pleasure to have you on Evidence Strong Show. If you could briefly introduce yourself.
Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for having me. My name is Emily Neff. I am the owner of Relentless Athletics. We are a female-focused strength and conditioning facility. We only work with adolescent female athletes. We've been here for 10 years. All of our girls at Relentless play sports, and we have a heavy reliance on Olympic weightlifting. And this is what I actually, this population is what I based my dissertation work on. Utilizing Olympic weightlifting really as a novel tool for neuromuscular training to potentially help reduce ACL injury risks.
Awesome. All right. We need some kind of backstory. How did you arrive here?
Yes, in terms of the study. So basically, I mean, I've always wanted to put what I've been doing here for the past 10 years at Relentless into actual work and then to publish it, because I've seen it work year after year after year in terms of reducing ACL, just reducing overall injury rates, as well as being an Olympic weightlifter myself, understanding the brain-body connection and how necessary that is to execute the lifts, but then what that is doing at the inter and intramuscular level for athletes in general. So while working with our athletes and just seeing their movement quality increase, their rates of injury decrease, comparing that to their peers who were not participating in these types of lifts and looking at their injury rates, I knew that this was something that I wanted to, you know, actually put into research, because my population here is so unique and very far few gyms have this many girls that are this age that are performing these lifts that we can then study and get published to, so that other people can actually base off, you know, this type of work.
What is specific about this population?
We see spikes in injury, specifically ACL injury rates occur during the pubescent period in female athletes. And unfortunately, most studies, when we actually look at the ACL in female athletes, occurs when they're in college, just because they're an easier population to study because you don't need parent consent. So if we need to understand what's going on at the physiological level that's leading to this increased injury rate, we absolutely need to study this population. So because I work with this population, this is really why I wanted to conduct the study on them and be able to put the results into actual practice, especially because when you look at the research in general, you know, there's a lot of talk now of ACL injury rates and how that could be related to phases of our menstrual cycle. Well, if that were the case, why do we see an increase of these rates occur during pubescent period and of at least 1 year from a female athlete getting puberty? 50% of her cycle is an ovulatory, meaning that she's not actually ovulating because her hormones don't spike high enough. So if we want to focus on female physiology, these things don't actually add up. But what we do know is that females grow differently than boys. Males have a neuromuscular spurt. When they grow, they have an increase in their not only body size, but their muscle mass, and then their ability to actually utilize that muscle mass because of their neuromuscular coordination. But unfortunately, for female athletes, or females in general, they don't have the same neuromuscular spurt. In fact, they're neuromuscular deficit. We see an increase in body size, but not a concurrent increase in body mass, or specifically muscle mass. So when that occurs, females' ligaments and tendons become loose to try to accommodate for the growing bodies. And this may anecdotally be what you may say is a female, sometimes after she goes through puberty, she kind of looks like a giraffe with her head cut off and she's just super lanky, doesn't know how to control her limbs. Well, that's true. And there's a science behind it, but we can induce an artificial neuromuscular spurt. Research shows through neuromuscular training, particularly neuromuscular training that's going to incorporate strength training and plyometrics. So if we look at Olympic weightlifting itself is going to introduce a type of plyometric training as well as obviously strength training, because it introduces a progressive overload. So if we look at Olympic weightlifting, what a fantastic novel means of neuromuscular training. Further, other research has demonstrated that females become more interested in or adherent to training when there is some type of skill-based element. Olympic weightlifting is a skill. And unfortunately, when we actually look at studies that look at the prevalence of Olympic weightlifting utilized by strength and conditioning coaches, it's at a very low rate in females compared to males. So this is something that we need to look at and study and possibly introduce to female athletes, because not only does it have the potential to reduce these injury rates, but it also has the potential, because it's skill-based, for females to more so want to adhere to training and stick with it, which again, long-term will lead to lower injury rates.
Awesome. And there are a plethora of additional benefits that a female young athlete will get when they stick to training for longer. They stay in sports, they use it as physical activity later, and, you know, pass it down on their family members and so on. So lots of good things happening. Now, okay, this is what you decided has to be done. Now, how did you go about designing this study? Who did you invite? How did you structure the study and so on?
So the protocol for Olympic weightlifting was actually based on the protocol here that we utilized at Relentless. So this has been a very systemized approach to introducing Olympic weightlifting to females. It's based off of most of the protocol that's provided through USAW. So with that, we also simplified this approach because we're a business. We need to make sure that we have systems that every coach can follow. So our approach to coaching Olympic weightlifting is top bottom, clean only for the first month of training. Obviously, as long as an athlete can demonstrate proficiency in like an RDL, a front squat, all of that. But the main goal is for an athlete to be able to perform a hang clean while hitting three specific movement patterns. The athlete is able to maintain midfoot weight distribution, is able to hit vertical extension, and have a distinct start and finish position of her feet. Because this is neuromuscular training, this needs to be based on the athlete, and her progression and learning these movements needs to be individualized. So with that said, if an athlete cannot hit those three protocol, she cannot progress to below the knee in the second phase. Instead, the athlete then moves to the blocks, because this is based off of motor learning, where we need to slightly change the movement but stick to the actual goal itself to actually acquire the new motor skill. So those athletes will just move to blocks with the bar above the knee. Same goal, to maintain those three protocol. If the athlete is able to maintain those three protocol within that first phase, she then is allowed to progress to below the knee, but is introduced through movement chunking, basically where the athlete performs a hang clean and then a low hang clean with a pause above the knee. And now the additional protocol or specific movement that this athlete is trying to achieve is a consistent back angle from below the knee to above the knee. Because these athletes are only training twice a week, the first, like as I said, the first 4 weeks, the athlete is doing just a clean variation. She does a clean and a push press for day one and just a clean for day two. As we go to the second phase, the athlete will do either cleans off the block or clean plus low hang clean based on how she performed in phase one. And then day two will be a hang snatch. Same focus, focusing on midfoot weight distribution, vertical extension, a distinct start and finish position of their feet. And this is how we went about utilizing the Olympic weightlifting protocol as a type of neuromuscular training. We are not coaching athletes up to percentages. We call these, the whole point is working them up to what we call a threshold. So working them to a weight where the athlete is able to maintain those three movement patterns while hopefully hitting a slightly heavier weight than they hit the week before, but where technique is going to always triumph weight as well as the speed of the bar movement. So that threshold is basically where that athlete is able to maintain those movements, but is slightly challenged. And the goal is to push that threshold each week. From there, the weightlifting protocol itself is only going to last 30 minutes. The remaining 30 minutes of the hour session is going to be individualized. This is because research on the actual strength and conditioning training for the adolescent population is based off of it needs to be individualized to that athlete based on what her movement quality is like, as well as where her external sport demands. How many hours a week is she doing? So each athlete underwent a movement assessment prior to participating in the study. And this way, the athlete's remaining movements, which just consisted of some type of compound movement, such as bilateral squat, hip hinge, vertical horizontal press, vertical horizontal pull, nothing crazy, and some type of unilateral or split squat type of knee dominant movement pattern was all based on what their scores were. And these athletes were then either introduced to a barbell front squat based on their scores or just a kettlebell goblet squat. So that's how those athletes were progressed. Very simple linear progression. Phase one is all about movement exposure. Phase two is about increased volume of those same movement patterns. These athletes were all athletes that are already paying members of Relentless Athletics, but they were brand new to strength training in general. So they could not have more than a year of structured strength training program or training, or else they would not be eligible. All these athletes had no significant prior injuries, meaning they could not have been taken away from sport within the past year, greater than 22 days due to a type of injury, as well as, of course, having any type of surgery, anything like that. We're very fortunate enough that we also had a control group. And the control group were athletes that played on very similar sport teams to the girls that were participating, because all the girls that participated were individuals. They weren't an entire team coming in because it's an individualized training program. And these individuals from the control group all had very similar training loads, meaning hours a week of sport. And they did not participate in any external strength training program over the course of those 8 weeks. So that was really unique about this study, is that not only did we have a training focus group, but we also had a control group that was playing sport but not participating in this type of training, to then be able to look at the results. And what we were looking at utilizing force places, we wanted to look at two things. We wanted to look at power production, specifically through a drop vertical jump, as well as peak landing forces, to see what happens of those two qualities over the course of those 8 weeks across both groups.
And did you test before and after?
Yes.
Okay. How many participants did you have in each group?
15 and 9 were our total at the end of the 8 weeks that we actually were able to analyze the results from.
Awesome. And you tested
the drop.
Just the drop jump on the force plates.
Force plates. Yep.
All right.
The only other thing that we did is that we also looked at possible confounding factors. We looked at athletes. This was just through a questionnaire for their parents, besides asking them how many hours a week of sport, any prior injuries, as well as we wanted to know their menstrual cycle status. If they started their menstrual cycle, if it was regular or if it was irregular. Or if they're on oral contraceptive. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Are we ready for the results?
Oh, we are ready.
Let's go.
Okay. So what was most significant was looking at the pre and post of the actual vertical jump height in our drop jump. So our athletes that were performing the strength training program were able to increase by 129.7%. Meanwhile, the athletes in the control group, again, they were doing the same amount of sport volume, dropped 26.3%. So this demonstrated that this type of training, which I got into later in the discussion, is specifically neuroprotective, because when we look at previous research that demonstrates that sport itself is going to cause fatigue, and fatigue is going to influence our ability to produce power. And females specifically during peak height velocity are more susceptible toward this type of fatigue. And therefore, this type of training could possibly be neuroprotective in the fact that we didn't see the same drop off. Instead, we saw an increase. Now, when we looked at the ground reaction forces, we actually saw that there was no change across any group. So in control or the training group, there was absolutely no change. No drop off. Everything stayed very consistent. Athletes that came in with a higher vertical were those athletes that also had a lower peak landing force, regardless if they're on a training or control group. And this can kind of demonstrate what you would think, is that athletes that maybe are just more athletic and more powerful, therefore demonstrate better landing strategies. And this is just what we are proposing. With that said, we also suggest that perhaps because this is only an 8-week study and we're trying to utilize Olympic weightlifting as a type of neuromuscular training tool that is implicit in changing our jump landing mechanics, we probably just needed a longer duration study, which is what other researchers suggest, that in terms of motor learning, when we take this implicit approach, meaning we're not teaching an athlete how to jump and land. In fact, we're just trying to enhance movement quality implicitly through these movement patterns. We need a longer duration to actually see changes. So this kind of corresponded with what we expected in the research, but again, not what we wanted. So that was the vertical ground reaction force, PR forces, and so change across either group.
Did you look at the height of counter movement part of the drop jump? Did they improve after 8 weeks? Was it the same?
Yes. Yeah, so the training group increased by 129%, while the control group decreased by about 26%.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Could we bring it together? So what would be your advice from this study for the coaches?
So long-term advice for any coaches based on this research is that it is absolutely shown that this type of training is effective in terms of helping enhance power output, which is essential in athletes that play sport, and protective against those athletes that are not participating in strength training, which is often something that we see a lot of athletes drop off of when their sport seasons or sport buy-ins increase. So with that said, it really comes down to education. So sport coaches utilizing these full lifts and utilizing a skill-based approach is essential when it comes to improving power output and helping decrease any potential loss of that power output across, you know, demanding sport schedules. Only 2 hours a week is necessary to elicit these types of results, and educating parents on, although thinking or assuming that adding more to the schedule is actually going to be fatiguing to the athlete. In fact, we have research that have shown otherwise. Athletes that are actually adding this 2 times a week of training that emphasizes Olympic weightlifting actually helps your athlete perform better compared to those that are not, have a drop in power output, demonstrating their fatigue. So having that type of education for our parents is fundamental to help this age group in this female athlete population maintain this type of training, as well as when looking at the dropouts in terms of only lost 2 athletes across that point of time, it helps underscore that this type of training is going to help captivate female athletes to keep coming back. And that's what we need.
Sounds good.
Confounding variables, when we looked at irregular menstrual cycles, there was no statistical difference, as well as athletes that did not have their menstrual cycle. So when we looked at those data points itself, didn't affect the results in either case.
Interesting. Oh, another Pandora box to open.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
All right. Awesome. 2 short questions to finish. The first one is, what is your favorite lift?
Oh, the snatch. Most beautiful lift in the world. Of course, yes.
And the last question is, where people can find you when they want to see what you're doing or ask a question or get...
Absolutely. Probably our Instagram is the best way. So it's @relentless_athletics_. That's the easiest way to really get in contact with me, as well as just what we're doing here at Relentless.
All right. All the best, Emily, for your research and your work. And thank you for today.
Thank you so much.